princes are powerful challenges to a regime based on deference to power, and they brought him a lifetime of pain and an early death. But he never wavered in his strength and determination. His reminders I turn to every day. Every day I think of his model, which we'll be exploring further after reading more about the life of another man power was determined to keep from us, Nikola Tesla. Turning now to our reading of Margaret Cheney's Tesla, Man Out of Time. And as I've been introducing this every week, I say, please, as you are listening about Nikola's life after returning from Colorado in 1900, think about what it would mean for the power guys of his time and beyond, folks like J.P. Morgan and the heads of state Nikola appealed to for support as World War I loomed, support in scaling up his particle beam weapon in order to put a fast end to conflict through its awe-inspiring, if awful, demonstration of unassailable force. What would go through the minds of those who lust for power untouchable to learn of Nikola's invention? Think of what the current versions today would do, and you know what they did. Continuing chapter 15, Magnificent and Doomed. Others to whom Nikola Tesla confided his plans for the world system, communication system, included Astor and Ryan, although the full extent of Colonel Astor's involvement in the project is unknown. Tesla must have had some success, for when the former's estate was appraised in 1913, it revealed 500 shares of stock in the Nikola Tesla company. The spring of 1900 passed with Tesla in an agony of frustration. He and Robert read with dismay the newspaper advertisement of F.P. Warden and Company bankers, quote, money, Marconi certificates will net you from 100 to 1,000% better results than any labor of yours can produce, unquote. The stock of the British Marconi Company had first been offered at $3. Already, it was selling at $22. Tesla, believing that Marconi had infringed his patents, wanted to sue him. His mood was further inflamed by the final lines of the advertisement, quote, the Marconi system is endorsed by such men as Andrew Carnegie and Thomas A. Edison, and by the press of the entire world. Edison, Marconi, and Pupin are the consulting engineers of the American company, unquote. There it was, the three of them in cahoots to cheat him of his invention of radio. Tesla wrote to Robert pretending to feel optimism about the damages he might recover in such a suit, saying, I am delighted to learn from the enclosed advertisement that Andrew Carnegie has such responsibilities. He's a good man to call on for damages. My stocks are on the rise. Of all the people who had read Tesla's article in Century Magazine and been impressed by the boldness of his vision, one fitted the inventor's requirements perfectly, J. Pierpont Morgan. The two met for a talk about the world system. Tesla instinctively was less forthcoming than he had been with Westinghouse. No need to distract the financier with too much technical information. Instead, he dilated on themes of money and power. He described to Morgan the plan for all wavelength channels to be broadcast from a single station. Thus, the financier would have a complete monopoly of radio broadcasting. Where others in the field were thinking only in limited terms of point-to-point transmissions, as in ship-to-shore and transoceanic wireless, Tesla was talking about broadcasting to the entire world. Morgan was interested. Tesla followed up their meeting with a letter on November 26, 1900, describing exactly what he was offering, up to a point. He'd already made transmissions over a range of nearly 700 miles, he said, and was able to construct plants for telegraphic communication across the Atlantic and, if need be, the Pacific Ocean. He would operate selectively without mutual interference a great number of instruments and could guarantee absolute privacy of messages. He had all the necessary patents, he added, and was free to enter into agreements. He proposed that his name be identified with any corporation that might be formed and estimated a cost of $100,000 for building a transatlantic plant and $250,000 for a Pacific plant, with 6 to 8 months to build the former and 1 year for the latter. He made no mention to Morgan of the wireless transmission of power, not because he had given up the idea, but for the prudent reason that it would have made some of the banker's existing investments obsolete. In any event, Mr. Morgan could not be expected to be enthusiastic about the prospect of beaming electricity to penniless Zulus or pygmies, and for example, pygmies. By that word, they mean the Mbuti and Twa peoples, nomads of small physical stature. And we're going to pause here and comment. Nicola's treatment in a system premised on class, on rule, this man bursting with ideas and longing to put his capacities in the service of eternity, when the only way to do so was to go through the power guys who have very different priorities, principally to place all life under their weight, which stifles and ultimately destroys it, position themselves directly in the way, devise means, principally universities, to identify such as he and to shunt off their energy, creations, inventions, infinitely. We discussed an example of this last week in our Bill Gates Raids UC System Coffers to Sink Nikola Tesla show. The way Nikola Tesla is received in a system premised on controlling, commanding human energy, i.e. in a system in which human energy is not free, should be sufficient, once we discuss it, to prove that the evolution of humanity itself depends on our loving ourselves, putting ourselves first, refusing to put ourselves on the market, and being willing to work to achieve the needed intermediary steps, the global general strike and the global discussions necessary. Relatedly, to set these discussions up for success, we must prepare ourselves for power's preemptive strike on ideas it's threatened by, its strategy of burying that which it is afraid of. I was reminded of this by another conversation I had with my son, in which he said in reply to my now stock phrase, "We need evolution, not revolution," that he said, "That line has so saturated the internet, no one wants to hear it anymore." So let's consider this tactic. The power guys take ideas they hope to neutralize by owning, flood the internet with them, perhaps along with faux discussions detached, of course, from any workable plan for how to make them happen, and turn them thereby into cliches that people tune out before authentic discussion is underway. So how do our system dissolving ideas not get absorbed before they have a chance to do their work? And what makes them system dissolving? Next week, we'll continue reading chapter 15, Magnificent and Doomed, in Margaret Cheney's Tesla, Man Out of Time.